Please welcome Jim Kloss.
Good afternoon. Well, I got lucky. I formatted this thing for 16 by 9, and apparently I guessed right with that. As I was listening to the things here this afternoon, I realized how long I've been in the technology side. I saw my first eye pattern 28 years ago. It'll make that 29 years ago, working in telecommunications. That's one of those things that just kind of sticks along and lives a long time. So does this stuff. And when I put this thing together, I thought about, you know, what's really the target audience here? And one of the ideas I had was just, you know, how many of you are chief engineers right now? Or how many might want to become a chief engineer at some point in your career? And I kind of targeted it towards those two groups, but that, of course, isn't everybody. The bottom line is, if you know how the finance stuff kind of works, it gives you a leg up. Years ago, when I took my first job as a chief engineer, I had to learn all this stuff through the school of hard knocks. I didn't know it. I was in a station that was a long ways away from corporate, and I really kind of had to muddle my way through a bunch of it. Over the years, I've worked actually with 6 CFOs now, and you learn a lot from them. Every one of them is different. They all have personality, but you learn a lot over time. And, you know, who I am to drag you through this, I wear 2 hats at ECB. One of them is on the engineering side, but the other is on the IT side. And I don't look at IT so much as bits and bytes and, you know, how many megahertz am I getting through this processor. I look at it as tools to get jobs done. And accounting is yet another one of those jobs that's got to get done. We recently embarked on a project to replace our accounting system. We had one with, 20 plus years of experience, and we're replacing it. And to be able to support them from the IT side, I really kind of had to unravel their world and understand what they're looking at in accounting. And some of it was frankly a walk I had never done before. And once again, this is from the school of hard knocks together with a little bit of business school, but more hard knocks than anything else. So don't be afraid to ask me questions at the end or after here if that works better for you. Today I'm going to go through some super fast accounting basics. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on that, but I'm really not going to dwell on the basics of accounting real deep. None of us wants to be an accountant. But I got to say something about accountants. We as engineers have more in common with them than anybody else in the building. Think about it. We're responsible for bringing things in and pushing things out. They bring money in, they go through the process, and they push it out to pay the bills. We're bound by regulation. We have the FCC and FAA, things like that. They're bound by regulations. We both get audited. Think about the FCC mock inspections we go through. An accounting firm or accounting group is going to go through audit as well. Does anybody in programming go through all that? No. Does anybody in production go through that? No. Does anybody in news? No. We actually have more in common with accountants than anybody else in the shop. I'm going to talk about operating budgets and a couple of different constructs that you may run into in your career. But part of what I'm going to tell you is going to be stuff that they won't tell you even in business school. And that's what it means when this lands on your desk. A little bit on capital budget basics, and maybe set a few ideas for some of you who, you know, either haven't done it or just to hear some different approaches at how you can look at capital. Capital is the equipment purchasing. Procurement basics. I'll talk about this again, but if there's anything that can get you killed in this business, it's procurement. And my goal is to never hear of any of you getting killed. And then finally, a little bit on analysis concepts. Accounting basics. Double entry. This is just the weirdest darn thing. If you have to write a check, like I've written out here, operating cash gets debited, the checking gets credited. Everything shows up in two places. And when it does that, That's a transaction. The whole key and the whole Gordian knot that is accounting is tracking those transactions and then making sure that they conform to the business rules that govern that transaction. And, you know, what precedes and what follows. It's nothing more than process following, transactions. Now, getting into the systems that are behind an accounting system, they're really nothing more than a bunch of database or a database. And everything that you do really comes down to a source and destination code. So once again, that transaction. When you think in terms of a source code, right pocket, keys. Who am I going to give them to? Nothing much more than that. You know, the right pocket would have a code. Where they're going has a code. This is called the chart of accounts. Accountants talk about this like it's some big magical thing. And I'll show you a really small piece of the chart of accounts that I kind of made up for this. But think of them as nothing more than identifiers in a database, much the way that we would think about things in an automation system. It's not a lot different. You know, it's made by people again. And if it's well designed, it works for a roll-up report. Think about, you know, the budget that we might have for engineering. At the end of the day, all we really want to know is how much is engineering going to spend this year. So all of the account codes that are underneath it really should roll up to one master code. Believe it or not, that's hard to do because accounting ends up to be an awful lot like, well, a lot of our facilities. You add a little bit on, you add a little bit on, you add a little bit on. They get a little convoluted. Every now and then, you're just going to have to clean them all up and start over. We just did that. Here's kind of a sample chart of accounts. I know this might be a little bit of an eye test in the back, but down here, I've got this one little number, 02, 03, 03, 04, that is really just a makeup kind of working across the chart. Now, here I used ABC and then 03, which would be WLS, the department, 03, engineering, and then finally a telecom expense. That's a real classic as far as one destination. Now, this gets used in finance in two sides. Number one would be just the straight accounting group as far as, you know, when you get a bill, they code it to that, and, you know, that's how it gets paid. But the other side, and there's a natural tension between these two sides, is really the finance and budget side, which makes the decisions on how much money you're going to have in the different areas. The real accounting side is the operations group, if you think about it. And the finance is the one that's working more the policy. And the policy gets managed with this stuff. Audit. Audit is really the process of checking process. It's not what I ever thought it was going to be. When I started doing the things I do now, I thought audit was going to be kind of like when my wife goes through the checkbook after I've had it for a while, and she verifies that I've got every penny right. Nope. Not it at all. It's about verifying that the right processes were in place. As an example, if you get a piece of gear in, but you didn't have a purchase order for it, that's a break in process. That's the stuff that they're looking for. What auditors come to look for is to make sure that process is maintained, that there is good process, and it's well followed. There isn't an accountant on the planet that does anything but hates audit. Because just like us, they know where the shortcuts are. And there's places in our plants, physically, we know where the shortcuts are. You know, we might know where we've exceeded a few things or pushed a few things. I remember hearing some tower guy this morning talk about, yeah, we'll just hang another antenna on. It happens. But the process is really what is getting looked at when the auditors come from. And explaining where you've made a deviation in process is part and parcel of what goes on. And that's where the fun lies. Operating budgets. And this is really where I'm going to spend the vast majority of time today. If anybody wants to dive much deeper into the accounting basics, look me up. I'll go into that. This, where I'm going here, is really going to get in the hard nuts, what you learn in doing this stuff. There are three major types, inherited. That would either be from your predecessor, or if you've been in the job for a number of years, what you had from the previous year. The next is made from scratch. I'm going to talk a bit in more detail about these as we go a little bit farther in. Made from scratch is, let's just say your life has just gotten interesting. And I'll talk more about that. And then finally is the hypothetical. Now, for years, we've all looked at the hypothetical and go, I know what this is going to be. It's going to be another way to cut budget. It's not always another way to cut budget, because the hypothetical can also be something like you've got we've got an amount of money that we can allocate to improving something in the facility. What are your different options? And laying it out that way. Budgets aren't always a negative to deal with. Inherited budget, once again, it's one you might have gotten from your predecessor. Here's one of those things from the School of Hard Knocks. It will be a bone of contention between you and your general manager. And the reason I say that is a general manager will not always understand everything that you have in your budget. There will be parts of it that you are going to have to defend with your life. And if you come in as a new chief engineer, you might not know why you have to defend them. You might not understand that detail. The most important thing you can do in budgeting is to slow the process down enough that you can get the questions answered for yourself. If there's only one thing you can take from this whole thing, it's that. Because when you come in as a new engineer, as a new chief, you want to please. You want to try to right some wrongs. You want to establish a great relationship. You may screw yourself into the ground doing just that. And it's not a matter of being an engineering curmudgeon who doesn't want to change or doesn't anything like that. But you really have to take the time to get the understanding of what's behind those budget circles, because there's oftentimes much more story that's there. And it's also a place where you can get an opportunity to gain respect from that same chief or your same general manager. If you don't jump to conclusions, you can pass that on pretty quickly. And it will establish you very, very rapidly. Take your time. Just take your time. The other thing you can do with an inherited budget is a lot of times you can backwards engineer in that chart of accounts. Now, this gets you talking the same vernacular as the accounting folks. That's a good thing. Because if you're thinking in terms, when you finally get down to managing the budget and talking the same lines as they're monitoring, it takes you a long ways towards having a compatible relationship. We might have the most in common with the accounting folks of anybody in the office, but we're natural enemies. Because let's face it, they have what we want, they have the money, and they forever think that we're spending money on things we didn't need to get, because you'd be surprised who influences these people. Here again, you have to learn which parts are contentious. If you had a big service contract for your automation, maybe not everybody in the plant believes that you needed that. Find out about it. Work the edges of the facility, build the relationships, and learn what's really going on. Because that's where you're going to gain trust. And you need that trust. Because the other side that comes from hard knocks, and I think probably all of us know this from somewhere in our lives, not everything is going to go perfect. At some point, some big piece of equipment, smoke's going to come out of it, and you're going to blow a budget line like you wouldn't believe. You're going to need the grace from accounting and finance for them to move budgets from line to line to line to make that happen. If they look at you as somebody that, they'd throw you under the bus the first opportunity they get, Here's what's going to happen. Build their trust. Also, if you're new to the position, try and get your mitts on some old budgets. That may be hard, but it'll help you identify trends. You'll see where cuts have had, you'll see where transitions have been, and once again, it might help you identify sore spots. Once you've studied the budget and really start to get your head wrapped around it, you're ready to enter the next circle of confusion, and that's sitting down with the CFO. You need to do that. And, you know, if you've been relatively new to a shop or if you've been in it for 30 years, you really need to have a good sit-down with your CFO from time to time and talk through it. Get that history explained to you. And in a really complex shop like, say, ours, it takes you years to understand all of it. You can't grasp this stuff right away. Concentrate on getting that history. Get the sore spots exposed. I know I'm dwelling on the sore spots, but they're very real. And some of it won't be said to you until you ask the same question 88 times. I swear it's 88 times. Again, be slow to make changes. Even if something looks obviously wrong to you, man, oh man, there's lion traps in budgets. And one more thing. Do yourself a favor and take an online Excel class. Get really good at doing things like pivot tables and using all the different tabs. Making a spreadsheet looks as good as the ones that are coming from the other side of the table. It helps your credibility in the shop. You'd be surprised how much you can do in Excel. I saw the, what Jeremy Ruck had done. If you want to see just a kind of a neat one that a guy has done for speaker designs, a guy by the name of Francis Deck here in Madison did one that's just crazy good. The tools that are in Excel are really kind of beyond your comprehension until you dive in and get a little bit of education. Budget from scratch. If this happens to you as a new chief engineer, you're in for some fun. Here's why. Either the place has been so mismanaged that they don't want to show it to you, or your predecessor's in jail, or there was misappropriation of funds, or they're looking to throw somebody else under the bus. Maybe not you, but be very cautious. You kind of want to know why, but don't dwell on it too much because that can get you killed too. The last part is get a good handle on how accurate it needs to be. If you're starting from scratch, you know, what's the metrics that are there? And don't be afraid to ask that hard question. What is this going to be compared to? And if it's not perfect, what are you going to do to me a year from now? Ask them. You'll be surprised. They'll tell you. If you do have to build one from scratch, get that chart of accounts. Have somebody from accounting march you through that chart of accounts and make some sense of it for you. It'll help you out immensely because if you can build a budget from scratch using that chart of accounts, once again, you guys are all now talking a native language. Accounting and engineering are on the same page. There was a project I was involved with several years ago, and it was a pretty large grant that we actually had three different sets of accounts for. There was one that our state facilities had, there was one that our accountants had, and there was one we had in engineering. Those three spreadsheets did not reconcile. They weren't even close. And frankly, we lobbed grenades at each other over it. Finally, I picked one guy and I said, you're maintaining the spreadsheet, you're going to reconcile this, make sense of it, and nobody else touches it. That ended that element of the fighting. And that's the sort of thing you do if you start with a chart of accounts, because then you're all talking the same language. And that's very important. If you have to build a budget from scratch, start with the big things. You know, what are you going to spend on staffing, utilities, facilities, you know, any kind of maintenance contracts you got. Get those identified up front. That's going to be hard enough. And then swap some notes with some guys that have been doing it for a while, you know, to get a feel for what sort of other recurring costs you may have. It's probably the best you're going to get. I did get to do a scratch budget once, and that was when I was working in telecom in a startup. We frankly didn't know for sure. And, you know, there was things we guessed on, and we were pretty good. There were other things we guessed on, and, well, we weren't so good. And that's the truth. Accept this fact. If you build one from scratch, it's not going to be perfect. And don't be afraid to share that fact with the people who have you do it. Complete the work. Don't walk away from it. But accept the fact that it won't be perfect. Managing the budget. Now, if you've got an inherited budget, it shouldn't be too hard to manage. If you built one from scratch, as said, once again, they're not that hard to manage. The trick is to look at the things that move around. You know, you've got big overhead things, like say you're paying rent on towers and all of that. That stuff is so easy to track, it's silly. You know, if that takes you 15 minutes a month, that's all it should take you. It's the things that move around that you got to watch. You know, I mean, if you end up throwing a lot of money at tower contractors because you've got ongoing problems with strobe lights, or if you have a lot of overtime because this or that keeps failing, or you're understaffed or what have you, that's the stuff you really got to watch. Put your real effort on the things that are variables and work at trying to understand them and what urges them, because in future budgets, that's the sort of information that will give you a tremendous leg up on estimating what size that pot needs to be. Budgets are a living, breathing thing. You know, think about 10 years ago, how much money we would have put into tape heads in a facility, in a television facility. You know, Sony upper drum was, what, $1,500 if you had DT heads? If you needed an upper, now it's another $2,000, pinch rollers and what have you, throw another $500 at it. Okay, we don't buy that stuff much anymore. So that line item goes away, but other things pop up. You know, that same 15 years ago, how many of us were buying service contracts for a master control switcher? We weren't. You know, we had a box of capacitors, resistors, and some switches, and kept boogering the thing together forever. So, you know, there is definitely a flow and ebb that's there. And to track those trends and get a good gut feel for them so that you can keep those somewhat accurate are really important. And that's the stuff that's moving around. And it can get you killed. It can really get you killed. Keep your CFO informed. You know, I kid around about it with my wife that she keeps me on a short leash. And there are some relationships in the workplace that we have to keep on a short leash. And the CFO is one of them. Tell them when things are right. Tell them when things are wrong. Don't let them come asking you. Because when you hit them first, you're driving the conversation. When they hit you first, you're going to get driven over. Guaranteed. And not all CFOs are that way, but I've worked with some real curmudgeons, especially in telecommunications, and just over-communicate to them. It'll save you so much time down the road. What-if budgets. These are definitely where you get to exercise your creativity. The thing about a what-if budget is you have to be so familiar with what's all going on around you. You know, what are all the variables? And this is where you get to use your true judgment and your true creativity. This is also the hardest thing that you can possibly do, because there's going to be things that are going to press emotional buttons in you, especially when you get to staffing or you get, you know, in budgets that are full of hard cuts. It just rips you apart as you go through it. Get familiar with using multiple tabs on a spreadsheet. because it comes real nice to be able to copy and paste different tabs and then kind of just work through variables as you move around. Concentrate on staying on task. One of the things that I've come to realize, and I'm going to take this dirt road. Several years ago, I went to a class on grant writing, and it was taught from the perspective of somebody who reviewed grants. And what she talked about was the grant reviewers actually had a very short period of time to review a series of grants. They'd go to Washington, D.C. for 2 weeks and maybe have to look at 300 grants. So pretty quickly they learned you've got to parse your time out so you can hit the major points in all of these. The same thing comes true with this. If you give yourself a finite amount of time to accomplish something, it forces you to focus on getting the major things right. Because when you're dealing with something you don't want to deal with, or at least I know I'm sure this way, I tend to want to go off on the things that are either more enjoyable or more palatable to me. But if you give yourself some hard deadlines on time to get the majority of it done, you got a chance on staying concentrated. What if budgets? The percentage cut overall. I love this one. Because the first time you do one of these and really look at it, you go, that is just absurd. It doesn't work. But you have to do at least one of those in your life to see how come they don't work. As an example, how can you do a flat, say, 5% reduction across utilities? Utilities are what utilities are. And rapidly you see the futility of that. Rather, what you have to do is you've got to look at the things that can change. But it's one of those exercises I firmly believe that we all have to go through to really begin to identify the things you can impact and the things you can't. And you'd be surprised how many things you can't impact. So much for the negative side of it. The positive side in budgeting is when you look at what you have for a capital budget or what you can spend to improve. And this is the more fun side of creativity, and we all get to do some of this. Look for an area workflow can be improved. You know, if you've got a process where somebody has to manually type everything in after they've received it on a fax, is there a better way to do it? Look for those kind of things. I mean, those are the real efficiencies you can get in the plan. And those are sometimes what you can use to get your cuts. Sometimes you just can improve the plan. Concentrate on an area of poor performance. If there's something you're routinely doing wrong, and there isn't a plant out there that doesn't have something they're routinely doing wrong, use that. And then finally, look to realign with current station objectives. They keep moving. You know, are you becoming more news-centric? Are you becoming more promotion-centric? Are you doing much more on the web than what you used to do? In radio, are you tipping up a second channel on HD2? You know, where is the business going? And to keep yourself aligned with that. And sometimes the answers to that don't come out of strategic planning. What they come from is working the edges in the hallway, paying attention, actually reading the stuff that maybe is your own station's promotional material. Get an idea of where the objectives are. Sometimes finding those is not as easy as you'd think. Like in our place, we've recently changed over our educational programming delivery. We're making a much bigger deal out of web delivery. As things have gone forward, the schools are just chock full of iPads. The little school I went to high school in, Random Lake, I graduated in class of 92 there. They just bought 500 iPads. So, you know, it kind of gives you an idea of what kind of proliferation of those products are there. Because of that, we're getting real big into web delivery. So it became very important to us as a delivery method. And, you know, that's just an example of staying in tune on where the place is going. Capital budgets. A couple of circles of thoughts here. Once again, respond to changes in the industry and the station's directory. Know what they are. You have to deal with the replacement of aging gear. And unfortunately, that replacement cycle isn't what it used to be. Anything really with a microprocessor in, what's its lifetime? It's not 20 years. It's probably not 10. Unfortunately, I don't know of any places that's truly capitalized to be able to keep up with IT sort of equipment replacement at the sort of rate that, shall I say, the magazines say. You know, there's definitely a disconnect between the money in our pocket and the thoughts of the software industry. So you have to prioritize that. And this last one was a really hard bullet for me personally to learn. And that is what I think is the most important. It might not matter a whit to anybody else. Everybody has a different sense of priorities in a station. And at the end of the day, the general manager is going to kind of sort things out. And their priority is number one. Get over it. You know, this is kind of a model that we have in the state, but it's one that I really think works for a lot of people. And here again, budget is not a perfect, it's not a completely accurate science. You know, I wish I was still buying agricultural equipment or, geez, even capital equipment of 15, 20 years ago. You could really pretty accurately predict this. But you can get a pretty good handle of the stuff that you really need to get rid of in the next year. I'll bet you every one of you can think of a number of things in your place right now you'd love to have out the door in the next year. 3 years from now, and then 6 years from now. You think, did I go two here? I guess I didn't. Know what workflows you've got are a mess. Kind of just like the same people that do the audit. We know where we have the dirt under the carpet. Or maybe we do. We should know. Think about things that you can make a change that would make a change to the audience. You know, better signal performance, the graphics that promotion wants, all kinds of different things. Know what they are. If you concentrate on those two, you can do a much better job as you get through analysis of looking for things if they're going to survive or not, because you're going to get allies. So in budgeting for replacement, here was a slide I was thinking about before. Just do a sweeping inventory of what's in your plant. Loose roundup. I mean, I'm talking something you just write down on a yellow pad. Don't overthink it. And then put each of those systems into one of these categories. 1 year, 3 year, it's getting fuzzier. 6 years, getting really fuzzy. Not for a really long time. There's a lot of stuff that's not for a really long time. I mean, how often do we replace towers? At ECB, we just replaced one. It's the only one I've replaced in my career. You know, so there's some things that are not for a really long time. But kind of get those rough groupings. These are all going to become negotiable at some point. But at least to be able to give your opinion to those above you. And it helps them formulate for the future. Now here's where it gets fun. Take a look that also are in the change needs. You know, maybe say, you know, master control switchers are an easy one to pick on. You know, maybe you need more layers of keying than you have right now, and that's a device that's hit that point where it's aged out in your plant. That makes a much easier argument to be able to get the capital funds for than either one of those stand alone. Help others understand those groupings and intersections. This is something I personally struggle with. You know, I can see this stuff really clearly, but how do I get others to understand it as clearly as perhaps I see it? Think about how you can help your general manager and the people you work with to understand this stuff really clearly about why something is important to be where it is. And once again, even though you might try to get them to understand it, their priorities and your priorities probably aren't going to be the same. Get over it. Procurement. I'm not kidding. This can get you killed. There's really two big trains of thought. Make sure the stuff's going to work. That's not so easy. And second, be honest in purchasing. There's a lot of groups, and I happen to personally know the guy that was kind of responsible for one of the big commercial groups moving in this direction years ago, that moved a lot of these elements of procurement to corporate. If you work for a group that does that, celebrate it. Let them have it. You don't want this stuff. Talk about risk. Guess who holds the bag? You. Favoritism. No free lunch. There's one organization I'm aware of that the chief engineers buy the vendor's lunch. And it kind of makes sense because they can never be said that the vendors bought them an opinion. Think in those terms. In state service, it's real easy. We just say no. Stepping on the GM's toes. Minor war story to tell on this. I was redoing a master control a bunch of years ago, and I was going to redo the flooring in that area. And I had a contractor all lined up. Well, it turns out my general manager had a trade out for flooring. That didn't go well. Stuff won't work. How many of you bought a piece of software that just ticked you off after you got it out of the box? Everybody. Your staff hates your decisions. You'll get those opportunities. And finally, the manufacturer goes belly up. Yeah, that happens. It really is hurtful, though, when it happens within a year after you bought something. It'll happen. Play this game long enough. There are some countermeasures. Run full evaluations. This is something we started doing after one of our projects that went absolutely haywire. I like to bring stuff in, really do a small-scale integration, and make sure it's going to work. I don't believe anything in the box anymore. I don't believe anything in a website. Sorry, you sales guys. I don't always believe you. I got to see it. And, you know, it's really hard on the people that I work with because they got to put a lot of time into this stuff. I had the pleasure of working in a design group many years ago in telecom, and we got told there, 70% of your design time, we're going to throw it away. You're going to learn a little bit during that process, but that won't be the projects that we stick with. And once we as a group got over that, it didn't really bother us. But not everything you do in evaluation ends up to be the product you end up living with. Look for a competitive avenue for everything you buy. Let them fight. Competition's good. You know, DA is a DA at the end of the day. And don't get too married to one color horse. Swap notes with others in the same boat. That's one of the things that this place is all about and why I appreciate such a long period that we had, you know, from 10 o'clock to 1:30 today. There is an awful lot of sharing that we can do here, an awful lot of business cards. I look back to, there's two guys here from Iowa that we've swapped notes with over the years, and they've swapped notes with us. Your peers, every one of them sees different things than you see. Reach out to them. He with the best Rolodex wins in this game. More procurement. Every organization has different thresholds. And what I mean for that is things like, you know, what can you procure on a credit card? What do you need a purchase order for? What can you write a check for? They're all different. If you come into a new facility, ask. You'd be surprised. When you come into a new facility, everybody around you might have been there a decade. They all assume everybody knows this stuff. You don't. But the first time you make a misstep, man, you get hit with a bolt of lightning. So ask. It only takes a few minutes, but it saves you from getting whacked with lightning. If you haven't done any bid work, reach out for a little help. it's a landmine. I mean, it's just landmines everywhere. And it is a cat and mouse game, and we all know it. Ask for help, either through your facility's legal, through some peers, hire a consultant. Get a little help until you really get some air under your wings. It takes a little time. The waters are very treacherous. A little quick of bit of analysis. Return on investment. It's not what you think. Return on investment is really a comparison of if you invest, I don't know, $100,000 in T-bills or $100,000 in this new thing for the station. Which one of those piles of money is going to be farther after a period of time? It is not how quick a piece of equipment can pay back for its being there. It is, and this is the way that the Wall Street guys look at it. It is purely, hey, I could make this much on the open market with my money, or it's going to make this much for the facility. That's how they look at it. Use it wrong, and somebody who's well-schooled in finance knows you're a rube, and they'll call you out on it. Cost-benefit. Once again, it's not how quickly something's going to pay for itself. It's a study of a long-term or a medium-term financial model between two different ways of doing, or multiple different ways, of getting the same thing accomplished. That's all it is. And, you know, so the assumption is you're going to do it. Now, how can we do it for the lowest cost? You got to be honest. If you got an axe to grind or you're trying to prove a technology through a cost-benefit analysis, stop right there, take a deep breath, and start over. You're going down the wrong road. You've really got to be just a brutal analyst. One of the guys I worked for years ago used to say, treat it like it's your own money, not somebody else's. Really build as accurate a picture of the whole life cycle as possible. You know, project it out 10 years, 15 years if it's something that should live that long. And that gets hard, but that's where we get creative, and that's where our experiences from looking at, you know, how this stuff works over the years really helps us out. Did I say no favorites? I mean no favorites. You know, you can put a John Deere, a Farmall, whatever, it don't matter. It's a tractor. That's all you're looking for. Cost to include, equipment purchase, installation labor, maintenance projections, annual depreciation. And with that life cycle depreciation, you know, as an example, if you look at master control products right now, and I kind of keep picking on that, for years we were looking at a 20-year life cycle. Right now, realistically, we're probably looking at a 6. So when you look at that, now extend it out over the 20 years, you're doing 3 replacements. Really add it up. Well, that's pretty much it. But I see I'm down to about a minute and a half here, so any questions? Comments? Blank checks?
I can answer that. I should have announced this earlier, but with each speaker, we send out a permission sheet, and if they give us permission to publish their presentation, we will have that up on the SBE24.org website. It'll give us about 3 weeks to get that done, because we put up the audio and the presentation, so it takes a little while to get those web ready. But I don't know what you did, Jim, but if you give permission, it'll be up there.
I did give permission.
Okay, it'll be up there.
All right, well, thank you.